from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. We are live at Castlemont High School in East Oakland. And this morning, we take on the topic of the dropout crisis in California and across the United States as we look at the problem in this opening hour, and then take up the challenge of what solutions there might be in the hour to follow. Nearly one quarter of American high school students drop out before they graduate. And in Oakland, the problem is worse, with nearly 40% of high school students never making it to graduation. Dropouts are exposed to an uncertain future with higher rates of crime, poverty, and health problems than their peers who have diplomas. This morning, we discuss the dropout challenge with educators and students and you next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny, and we are live at Castlemont High School in East Oakland, California. With some 706 students, Castlemont is a campus of three small schools which will consolidate in the fall of 2012, and it's ground zero for the high school graduation dropout crisis. The Oakland Unified School District presently has a nearly 40% rate compared to 25% nationally and 18% on the state rate. And what factors contribute to students dropping out of school? What can teachers, the schools, the communities do to help keep kids in school, to make learning relevant? We know that those without a high school diploma are more likely to have a more limited, even sometimes a grim future than their peers who are graduates, and are more likely to live fewer years, endure more health problems, commit crimes, and live in poverty, thus creating much higher social costs at a time when budgetary cuts have been so devastating. This hour, we focus on the scope of the dropout problem, and joining us is Aaron Bowman, who is acting principal of East Oakland School for the Arts, one of the three small schools on the campus here at Castlemont High. Welcome.
Great to be here.
Great to have you here. And we also want to welcome Ali Khan Bulani, who is a 10th grade math and world history teacher and school culture leader. We'll find out what that means here at Eastern Oakland School of the Arts. Again, one of the three small schools on the campus of Castlemont High School in the Oakland Unified School District. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. And also glad to have Salazar Sugnikte, who is Restorative Justice and School Culture Coordinator at Castlemont Business and Information Technology. Again, one of the three small schools here on the campus. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
We also have Edson Gonzalez with us, a student, age 17, in the Castlemont Business and Information Technology School. And welcome. Good to have you. Thank you all for being here. And let me begin with the principal, Aaron Bowman. Let's talk, first of all, just about the challenges here in terms of keeping kids in school. With the budget cuts and so forth, what are the major challenges that you face?
There are myriad challenges. I think attendance is a huge issue that we struggle with. Ensuring that curriculum is relevant and rigorous and engaging, especially in a time of high-stakes testing, especially in light of the budget cuts in the state of California and in Oakland Unified School District, where we're trying to become more responsive to student needs at the same time that we have less and less resource to do that with.
And you have an achievement gap here. I mean, what is often touted as a major achievement gap, number of those in from African-American, Hispanic backgrounds and learning English backgrounds, the numbers are there. Harder problem getting them to graduate.
That's absolutely true. And we seek, I think, in many ways to create enrichment opportunities and intervention opportunities to meet the needs of our student population. We serve a mostly African-American and Latino population. We have also a Pacific Islander population, and they all have really unique learning needs, right? And so we seek as a school to provide what is a really rigorous and relevant curriculum for our students so that when they enter the classroom, they want to be there, they want to stay there. We seek to create opportunities for adults and kids to be in really positive, caring relationships so that kids have a real reason to want to come to school. And those are some of the things that we do on a really daily basis. And we're also seeking to create more systems to ensure that kids are being held really close.
Relevant sometimes means going to cultural and timely sorts of things, or things that are very much of the moment. Does it perhaps interfere with nuts and bolts type of learning, how do you pretty much create the balance between those two?
So I think often in urban schools we see this what's called a drill and kill test driven culture, right? This idea that
especially here in California, where test scores mean everything.
Absolutely, but that's not that's not really responsive to student needs, right? Our students come with the amazing ability to think critically, and they have an amazing array of higher order thinking skills. But when we just focus on teaching to the test, we actually don't engage kids, right? So if you were in a classroom and all you did all day long was kind of basic skills, you'd be less likely to want to come back. Whereas if you're in a classroom where you're really being challenged, where you're being asked to think for yourself and question and analyze and think critically, then you're more likely to want to come back to that class the next day.
Culturally relevant is what you're talking
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. Culturally relevant pedagogy.
But you need those test scores too, and so it's a delicate balance, as I'm suggesting, isn't it, always?
It is a balance. However, I think if you just go for the basic skills approach, you're going to lose kids, right? So it's a no-win. However, if you really go for the higher order thinking skills, you're going to fill in the basic skills as you go. So it's a both-and approach, right? You focus on the higher order, and the basic skills come with that.
Aaron Bowman, again, is the acting principal of the East Oakland School for the Arts, one of the three small schools here at Castlemont. And I believe you came here after the break into three schools. And your first day, there was a lockdown for 4 hours? Is that right?
My first day as principal, which is the beginning of this year, there was a lockdown for I think, 4 hours. Absolutely.
How often do you have lockdowns here?
Not too often. And often they're because of events in the community. They're certainly not because of events on our campus. Our campus is a relatively safe campus in a very crime-ridden area, right? So we have maybe two or three lockdowns a year, mostly because of things outside of our campus gates.
No gangs presence here on campus?
We struggle and have struggled over the past 7 years that I've been here with a presence of gang-related issues on campus, that's for sure. I think I see it less now than I used to see it, but it certainly is an issue in the community primarily, and that is an issue that's brought to campus on a daily basis.
But you feel that the students can feel safe here?
I do. I think students do feel safe here. I think that we're always struggling to make it a safer place, but I do believe that kids, when they're in their classrooms, when they're engaged, that they do feel safe. And the campus as a whole, it's a closed campus, so there are gates that are locked during the day, and that is to provide a safer environment so kids do feel secure here.
And Ali Khan Bulani, tell us what it means to be school culture leader.
Interesting question. School culture leader is kind of a term that is used pretty broadly, I think, at our site. A lot of stuff that Aaron's talking about in terms of the kind of institutional practices and efforts to keep kids in the classroom academically need to be bolstered with like kind of the social and emotional part of it. So school culture leader to me has been through the function of creating positive school environment, making sure that kids feel well appreciated in their building, walking down the hallway, and making sure that you know that if you've done great academic work, the rest of the community is going to know. If you've done, you know, things that are related to kind of our core values of the school.
You're giving them their props? Is that what you're doing?
Giving them their props.
Yeah, okay. I just want to get that clarified. And you're now the lone math teacher, as I understand it. I mean, there were once four math teachers. This is a good indication of what's happened in terms of budgetary cutbacks.
I am actually not the lone math teacher. There is a lone math teacher at our school. I am now actually teaching mostly history.
But you're also working as vice principal, as I understand it, and a counselor, right?
And anything else that you want to throw at me, yes.
You have to be a man of many colors here in terms of your pedagogical responsibilities.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's what is really unique about school sites in Oakland. I mean, specifically in East Oakland. I mean, that's my only context, having only been here. But it takes a lot more than what happens from bell to bell. It takes much, much more. And I think all the teachers, all the students can speak to the fact that what makes a community and what makes a school is actually that intangible, unquantifiable quotient of love. And I think that's really where we're at.
Well, you've said it's like doing a jazz band. You have to improv every day. Huh?
Absolutely.
What about this notion of the 50-50? This was said by the head of the Oakland Unified School District that about 50% of the kids go on to a life post-secondary, and about 50% go to a life of violence and poverty. Is it that sharply etched here, do you think?
Yes. I think one of the saddest stories that you can tell in terms of Oakland schools is that it's that stark. And what's crazy to me is that that's a social reality. That's something that we have conversations about. It's not, it weirds me out that it's not more of a moral issue, in the sense that people are willing to engage in conversations about something that's so against the social ethos of our country, right?
So how do you sell kids on the idea that they should be in school, that they should stay in school, particularly when often the challenge is getting them to think that, well, learning is exciting, because of course it is, or that you can feed into their curiosities?
I mean, I think that goes back to the teacher's role as being a facilitator towards this vast amount of knowledge about ourselves. And I think that comes back to the culturally relevant part of it all, because really, I mean, if you have to approach education with a sense of self-determination, this is about how I'm going to create a better self. And I think that's a hard task to do in a classroom when you have 50 minutes, but you know, all in all, both and everything.
Especially when you have so many different selves in the classroom.
Totally.
Again, Ali Khan Bilani is a 10th grade math and world history teacher and school culture leader here at the East Oakland School of the Arts. We also have Signicte Salazar with us, restorative justice and school culture coordinator. And we want to talk about restorative justice. But you yourself were right on the verge of being a dropout, weren't you?
Well, I went to Oakland Schools here, and I think that I myself experienced a lot of the issues that are happening here at the school, being, you know, the lack of resources that happen in the community, the gang violence, and especially myself being an undocumented student. I think that was a big struggle in trying to see what it would mean for me to get a high school diploma and try to make it to college, knowing that the options are very limited for undocumented students out here, and knowing that there's also, you know, the constant possibility and constant trauma of potentially being deported as a student. And I think that's something that a lot of our students here face, is they have uncertainty and unsafety in school. And if us as adults aren't able to provide that certainty, that safety, and that security, then we can't expect them to learn in the classroom. We can't expect them to try to concentrate on a math problem, or try to concentrate on history, or try to concentrate on English when they're dealing with being hungry, when they're dealing with having to deal with the trauma of a family member, a friend being killed, when they're having to deal with the fact that their parents aren't around. We can't expect our children to, you know, to feel invested in their education if we're not invested in their lives and them as individuals and their safety.
So what made you invested personally? And I'm also interested in finding out about hunger, because there is a school lunch program here, isn't there? I mean, just in terms of taking care of those needs, about 70% of the kids are recipients of that presently.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of things. When talking about the lunch program and the breakfast program and even the dinner program that we currently have, I think one of the things that we have to do as a school is really try to work collaboratively and create systems so that both students, teachers, and individuals in the school understand the resources that are here. In Oakland and even in the school, Casamont, we have a lot of resources, but a lot of people don't understand the resources and the richness that we have here. And I think we have to do an immense amount of work to build together as a community so that both our students, our teachers, and our community at large understand that richness and are able to benefit from it. So,
can you break down the demographics for us somewhat of the school here?
The race demographics?
Yeah.
I don't know the exact numbers, but I believe that Ms. Bowman, actually, can you speak to that?
Can you help us, Erin Bowman?
Yeah. I think it's about 50% African American. Actually, I think it's about 50% Latino, 40% African American, and 10% kind of other or Asian Pacific Islander. And I think we have about an 80% free and reduced lunch rate. That's the rate of students who qualify for free and reduced lunch because they come from low income families.
So, Ms. Salazar, again, what you learned from your own experience, how can you apply that to the students that you work with and make them invested in their school?
Right. I think that one of the major things that contributed to me being reinvested in my education was having adults that were invested in me. And I think that the studies show that the number one factor for student success is teacher expectation, and just in general, adult expectation. And I think that one of the things that we have here in the school is that we don't necessarily have a lot of adults on campus that have high expectations of our students, that expect our students to succeed, and our students will always meet the expectations of their teachers or of adults. If we expect them to fail, then they're going to fail. If we expect them to read at second, third, eighth grade level, then that's where they're going to read. But if we have high expectations of them, then they will also meet those expectations. And I think I was lucky enough to have adults in my life who not only had high expectations of me, but taught me the role that I played in reinvesting in my education and organizing in my community. And I think one of the things that I like to teach our students is that school, you know, it's a game, and this game is not necessarily set up for our students to win. But when they lose, then us as a community lose. And when they win, we as a community win. So part of it is being able to play that game and being able to understand that their success and our community depends on them.
The teachers play a very singular role here, though. I mean, in terms of, well, being mentors, I mean, particularly with the budget cutbacks where you don't have the guidance counselors that you had and so forth. So, I mean, what I'm suggesting is there's even more of an onus, more of a burden on the teachers.
Here. Right. I think, like Ali Khan mentioned, right, I think a lot of us here have to play a number of different roles, whether it be guidance counselor, mental health counselor, the rides in the morning, the wake-up calls, whether it be, you know, trying to be family counselor, trying to be the tutor for them, a number of different roles that we have to play as adults so that the students understand that we are here and we're invested in them. And I think that's the number one thing. They have a lot of instability that they come into the school with, whether it be that some of them come from single-parent homes or some of them simply don't have parents. We have a number of our students who are coming from group homes or who are coming from the juvenile justice system, and I think that, you know, when they come into the school, this is their safe haven, and you could see that with the fact that you have students who don't show up to any of their classes sometimes, but they consistently come to school on time every day. And the idea of suspension is more terrifying for them because the fact that they have to go back home to that community where they have instability. They have to go back to the streets where they have that instability. And I think what we're trying to create here is a space where we can really, you know, try to understand their reality. And I think that if we as teachers and if we as adults in the school campus don't understand their reality, then they have no reason to be invested in us and what we have to offer them, really.
And again, Sugnakte Salazar is restorative justice and school culture coordinator, and I do want to talk with you about restorative justice, but I want to talk first with Edson Gonzalez, who's a student here, age 17, and whose parents were deported to Mexico. So you and your sister are kind of on your own here, right?
Yeah.
What keeps you in school? Why is it important for you? Because I know it's been, frankly, kind of a struggle, hasn't it?
Yes.
Personally? So why stay in school?
I'm staying in school not for me, but I guess to make my parents proud, to be someone. I need to stay in school for my sister. And, yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's it. You're here for your parents' pride and for your sister. What about you?
I personally don't like school. I know I do learn a bit when I come. Some classes more interesting than others. At other times when I'm at school, I'm just thinking, like, you know, what am I doing here? I can be, you know, I'm worried about where I'm going to, like, well, I got other stuff on my mind, like, oh, I need to make some money or something, you know, help out family or address other issues at the house.
You could be doing a job that presumably is going to bring some income in instead of sitting in classes that might be boring you.
Yes.
But you're obviously a young man with a lot of interests. As I understand it, you like botany, you like political activism, racial
yeah.
justice. So when your interests are connected here, you get ignited. That makes a difference
yes.
to you. Yeah.
The classes that I do come, that I do feel like are relevant to my life, that I would find interesting, those are the ones that I do like put like 100% effort in, not other ones that I feel like I'm really not going to use in my life at all or stuff that's not interesting to me.
And what about the sense of a payoff? I mean, you know, we got to get through school, maybe get through college. That seems a long way off, or does it seem like something you can actually envision?
I'm sure that if I do put 100% effort into school, I will go to college, but that's not really something that interests me. I don't want to go because I feel I need to just, you know, step up on my 2 feet and go get a job, go make some money, and I know not, there's a lot of people like that, especially here in Castlemont, that's not like their first option to go to college and stuff like that. But
but you've seen the numbers. I mean, you know, for example, if you don't have a high school diploma, you're often in a dead end.
I know that, but I think I would guess it's a risk that I want to take. So, per se, I guess I can be that inspiration to other people. Hopefully, if I make it, like, other students who aren't doing well in school don't result to giving up because they don't have that inspiration. Like, oh, you know, I could be that person to say, hey, but, you know, he didn't go to school, but he knew what he wanted in his life. So, he made it, and I can be that inspiration instead of to someone who's doing bad in school. They won't go to, I guess I'm going to drop out and just find any job. I'm going to focus on exactly what is it that I want in life and just focus on that main goal.
And Edson had a little bit of, you had a little bit of problem at one point, got into some trouble. We won't go there in terms of talking about what that is, but it happens to a lot of the kids here at Castlemont and in the Oakland Unified School District. And when there are disciplinary problems or when there's problems in the nature of whatever they may be, Signic Day Salazar, you have a whole different system here. It's restorative justice. As opposed to just one punishment for all. And so I want to talk about that a little bit, I mean, how that works. Restorative justice means that if kids get into trouble, they can actually talk about the problem, talk about it in a collective way,
I think
move forward on that basis? Yeah.
There's a number of different things that restorative justice means, and I think one of the things I'd like to highlight is the understanding that hurt people, right? When our young people are coming into the school campus and are coming into these spaces and they're feeling that hurt, they replicate that hurt onto themselves, onto their teachers, onto their community. And when we talk about restorative justice, I think for me, it has a lot to do with creating that space for healing and understanding of what's going on with our young people. And there's a number of different things. One of the things is, yes, when our young people are committing harm onto themselves or onto others, we don't want to push them out and continue replicating that thing that they have in the community where once they've done something wrong, they're exiled from our community, whether it be through suspension, expulsion, or things
this
of that
is what
sort.
They call push out. When somebody's push suspended, out, right? They wind up pushed out. Yeah.
Right. And I think we've seen it oftentimes is we have students that have been suspended and don't come back because they get themselves into trouble out in the streets. And then as opposed to it being a 2 or 3 day suspension or even a 1 day suspension, they end up spending weeks or even months in the juvenile justice system. And then they become part of that system where, you know, the recidivism rate is very high. We have, I believe it's 95%. And it's obvious why that's the case, right? It's most of the recidivism happens because of violations to their probations, whether it be that their attendance isn't up to par or whether, you know, they weren't able to pass their drug test or, you know, things of that nature. Most of it doesn't have to do with actual violent crimes or anything of that sort. And I think one of the things that we want to do here is not exile our young people when they commit a harm onto themselves or onto others, but really give them the opportunity to take responsibility for their actions and give them the opportunity to understand that they have voice and they have power and they have the ability to address their harm and learn from their mistakes and become part of a community where they're able to heal themselves and heal others in the process. And, you know, that's part of it. But another big part of restorative justice for us is also trying to create a space where teachers, adults on the campus, and students alike are building community with each other because, you know, I think in Mayan understanding, we have a term that's called enlakesh. And Nakesh basically means you are my other self. And if people here in the school understood themselves as, you know, related and trusted each other, they'd be less likely to harm each other.
All right. We are going to offer our phone number to those of you who are listening to us. You can call in and let us know. If you've considered dropping out or actually were on the verge of dropping out, what kept you in school? What do you think would help keep kids in school? And we'll actually talk to our audience of students here. You can call us now at 866-733-6786. That's toll-free, 866-733-6786. Or email us, forum@kqed.org. Or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and we are live at Castlemont High School in East Oakland. We're talking about the dropout crisis, and nearly a quarter of American high school students do drop out before they graduate. In Oakland here, the problem is even worse. More than 35% of high school students in the city do not reach graduation. Dropouts are exposed to an uncertain future with higher rates of crime, poverty, and health problems than their peers with diplomas. And this morning, we're airing a live broadcast here from Oakland's Castlemont High School, talking not only about problems, but also trying to gauge what we can, and we'll focus on this in the next hour, particularly about solutions. But you are certainly welcome to join us. In fact, we do welcome your phone calls. And I'm talking to the students who are here with us. If you have stories to tell, or if you have some sense of your own, well, struggling with the whole question of tensions about whether to stay in school or not, we also want to hear from you. With us is, well, a number of people here on stage at Castlemont High School. Sugnikte Salazar, whom you heard at the end of the last segment, is restorative justice and school culture coordinator at Castlemont Business and Information Technology School. And Edson Gonzalez is a student, age 17, in the Castlemont Business and Information Technology School. This, remember, is three schools, which will be consolidated into one. Aaron Bowman is the acting principal of the East Oakland School of the Arts. And Ali Khan Bulani is a 10th grade math and world history teacher here and school culture leader at the East Oakland School of the Arts. Aaron, can I tell you, ask you, acting principal Aaron Bowman, a little bit about what this consolidation will mean?
Absolutely. So Castlemont High School, I believe from the 1920s till 2004, was one large comprehensive high school. The push-out rate was high. It was not proving to be a successful place for educational opportunity. So through a grant from the Gates Foundation and through the partnership with the Bay Area Coalition for Equitable Schools, which is now the National Equity Project, the school broke into three schools. So from 2004 to our present day, we have served as three small autonomous learning communities, three small schools on this campus. Unfortunately, as you know, the state of California, there has been significant budget cuts, and we no longer it's no longer viable to run small schools on this campus. As Ali Khan mentioned, we all do so many different jobs. As an acting principal, I'm also in charge of counseling and attendance, and so it's just no longer viable to run small schools because of the limits of the budget. So we're in the process of bringing the schools back together.
And the Gates money is gone.
It is gone. It's gone. So we're in the process of consolidating the schools back into one school, Castlemont High School. So next year when we reopen in August, we'll reopen as one school. But we are hoping to take the lessons that we've learned from the small schools and leverage those to ensure. I think one thing we have learned that is that students need to be in caring relationships. As Ali Khan spoke to, it's all about love, right? Before you set high expectations for kids, you have to love them. And we have learned and we have put in systems into place to create these caring relationships between kids and adults. And we're hoping to figure out how to continue that in a larger school environment.
Some kids are easier to love than others, though, I imagine.
That is very true. But all kids deserve to be loved by their teachers as well as the whole community.
Well, again, if you'd like to join us, and particularly interested in hearing from those of you in our listening audience who have stories to tell about your own tensions over or questions that were raised in your own life, or for that matter, your children about dropping out, we do want to hear from you, and we'll hear from some of the members of our audience here. Let's go to Rich, who is joining us from San Jose. Rich, welcome.
Michael, how are you? Long-time
Hi.
Listener. Love your show.
Thank you.
I'm a high school dropout. I was asked to leave, but I had no desire to be there. You know, I was dyslexic. I wasn't given any help. This was back in the early 80s when, you know, they didn't have the help they have now. It impacted my life. I mean, I felt bad for years about my ability to, you know, to grow. And luckily, I got into an industry, and I was smart enough that I was able to move beyond my limitations and you know, run a successful business and raise a family and own a home. And just, you know, you have to want more out of life than what they're going to give you.
Well, you're one of the lucky ones who got by. I mean, because the statistics, as we said, are pretty sobering. I'm just wondering about how much dyslexia played a role, though. Often when kids can't achieve, Ali Khan, don't you find that those kinds of impediments often do lead them to drop out?
And yeah, I mean, the numbers support it too. Students with disabilities are suspended and expelled at a rate roughly twice of their non-disabled peers. So it has a significant impact.
Yeah, well, you're here to tell the story, Rich, and thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it was a negative impact on my life. I mean, had I gotten the help that I should have gotten and should have deserved, I mean, it didn't help that I didn't have help in my home, and I didn't get help from school, and finally started working at full time at 17 years of age. I'm 45 now, be 46 this summer, and I'm on my kids constantly. My kids are all AB students. I don't give them the opportunity. My wife and I are constantly on top of them to make sure that they're getting the needs that they have fulfilled. Luckily, my daughter had a little bit of an issue, and we've gotten on top of that. She's now an AB student. But, it takes, as you guys said, it takes love and caring and being pushed in the right direction, but I got none of that, and a lot of it was internal fortitude and the desire of not being poor and not being, labeled as someone who couldn't, and that was ultimately what changed my life.
Well, I'm glad you made it. Glad you made it through, and I very much appreciate your joining us here. In fact, let me go back, if I may, Sugnite Salazar, to you. How many of the kids face dropout problems in their own lives because of family difficulties, because of the kind of issues that we're talking about, whether it's learning disabilities or whatever? I mean, family problems specifically, though.
I think a large majority of the students that face dropout have to do with the outside factors that happen, whether it be family problems, violence in the streets, gangs. Even, when you talk about gangs, a large part of it, and I have seen here at Casamont, a large number of the students that are part of gangs come from are recent migrants who are trying to deal with the violence that they see in the streets and are trying to create a sense of protection for a lot of parents. And I could just say for my own family, when they're undocumented, they have to come here and work under the table jobs, and a number of them. So a lot of the times the children who are coming from undocumented families tend to be alone most of the time and tend to raise themselves, whether it be because of the number of jobs that the parents have to hold or because of the fact that a lot of their parents, face deportation or prison time. And so they're having to raise themselves and be grown-ups, and I think that's something that we have to see and deal with here at the school, is that a lot of our children face immense amount of responsibility beyond their age, and the level of stress that causes and the level of anxiety that causes creates a really negative learning environment for them. I have a lot of students who ask for short day schedules or are trying to look for alternative learning spaces because they can't deal with a full day of learning because of the level of anxiety that they deal with as children. And if we can't see that as a reality here in the schools and deal with that as teachers, then we're not being realistic to their surroundings.
Let me ask you, Edson Gonzalez, I mean, it's been tough for you, I imagine, just you and your sister on your own with your parents in Mexico. I mean, you were born here, so
yeah.
Talk about that, about the challenges.
During that, I guess I could say school was the last thing on my mind. I was deciding what was I going to do, where was I going to live, and realizing that now it's just like me on my own. I have to do things by myself, and a lot of people struggle through that and don't know what to do. Luckily, I didn't join a gang or go become no drug addict, none of that, but you don't really receive help when something like that happens, because me personally, I'm not one to talk about my problems and issues. I'm more like keep stuff to myself, and especially when there's not people there to push you you can succeed, you can there's a lot of help out there for you, and a lot of people don't get that, so they resort to they have to raise themselves. They have to. Some kids are left with nothing. I'm lucky to have my sister with me. Other people just are raised by the streets, and
you're making the challenge.
Yeah,
you're doing it. It's day to day. Huh?
Yeah, it's day. Yeah, I live day by day.
Let me go to a caller, Mayor Howie. Good morning, Mayor Howie. Are you there?
Hi. Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, I actually have a couple of questions. I graduated from Oakland Day back in 2003, but I was about to drop out because of if you are a foreign student, there's a language barrier first, and then plus there's not that much help for second language students. There's no counselors, most of them, they just want to take, like, you know, they don't give, even give you a time. Start with the principal, teachers, counselors. But also, there's a difference between if you are a student from other country and if you are a black African-American, if you are African from Afghanistan, they offer different classes for those people. So this gap will make a lot of difference between those schools. And I mean, when I was in Auckland, I was taking a class with just for white people. I was taking English class with Asians, Latinos, other African students. They don't put you, like, you know, with regular students. So that makes more, I was about to drop out, like, you know, forget the school. But luckily I succeed. I finished college and then much better now.
Well, I'm glad things worked out for you, but you've raised a very important point here. And let me go to you on this, Ali Kambalani, if I may. I mean, what special, especially when you're so strapped for resources, help can you give to students who are English learners or, in a case like that, not even necessarily a part of a major kind of minority group, as they're so called? Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, I think the place that we have to interact with it is in the classroom. And as teachers, you know, we're all equipped to the best degree possible to kind of interact with, like, learning and teaching strategies that are going to heighten that. But that being said, the resources are still pretty meager. And I know that one of my biggest challenges as a teacher is, skill is one thing. I mean, if you have a classroom with X amount of students who are at grade level or even beyond and another group of students who are not, I mean, just imagine being in an entire different sphere in which none of this is even making sense to you. So it's the challenge of the teacher, and that's where we kind of have to face it. Institutionally, it's extremely problematic because we don't really have a system or a program by which we address it. So I think it fundamentally comes down to, like, really intense, wonderful teaching strategies if you can do it.
If you can do it, yeah. And once again, though, Hispanic and African American students are, along with English learning students, at the top of the likelihood for vulnerability to drop out. We're going to go to another caller, and that's Oscar, who's joining us from Sacramento. Good morning. You're on the air.
Thank you for having me, Michael. I love your show.
Thank
my
you.
Comment is in regards to activity. For me, I found it that when I went to high school, that's one of the things that kept me in there. I struggled with high school as well, the language barrier. Being from Mexico, but extracurricular activities were what I found kept me, especially soccer, the Latino club. I just felt it took the focus away from just English, math, science, to something else, a place to meet new people, learn new things and interact with other students. And it just made it worthwhile. I'm fortunate enough to have gone to college and graduated, and I attribute a lot to the extracurricular activities that I took during high school. So,
well, I'm glad you brought that up, Oscar, and congratulations. I'm hearing some rustling from the audience here. Let me ask you in the audience, how many of you, you can do this with your voices, how many of you feel there's enough in the way of extracurricular activities to kind of keep your interests and sustain them? I'm not hearing a lot of noise here. Okay. I mean, certainly one needs these kinds of outlets. I'll go to the principal here, Aaron Bowman. Students need them, particularly when they're on the verge of thinking, maybe I should drop out of school.
Agreed, yeah. And we do have an after-school program, and I think one of the challenges is actually to get kids to stay after school and to go to these programs, right? We have, like, graffiti arts. We've had a multitude of things in the past that are really of interest to students, but actually getting kids to stay is a pretty big deal, and we've really struggled with it. I think as we move... The superintendent, I'm sure he'll speak to this in the second hour, but we're moving to the full-service community school model to provide wraparound services. And I heard Edson speak to this, right, that his mind was just really elsewhere and school was his last priority. And And I think it's really true that kids need to feel engaged, and they need to be engaged in enrichment activities. But we also we need to make sure that there are other kind of the prerequisites, right? Like healthcare, mental health services, healthy food, all those things, which are things that we seek to provide on top of the regular school day. They're really essential.
But the kids here, a lot of them are under really chronic stress. You hear about
Absolutely.
These family problems mm-hmm. and so forth. So, I mean, Edson, you have anything after school that interests you or brings you in here? Keeps you here?
Now I attend YU, Youth Uprising. That's been
it's
going
right
good.
Next door.
Yeah, right next door. I've never been really one to take my time to go into an after-school activity, but it's just not been for me. I know there's a lot of people that don't find that interesting, too. They rather be out on the streets with my friends, so that's how I was.
So talk about Youth Uprising. What do you find there? What's there for you?
Well, they got a lot of stuff appealing to a lot of students. Me, I started going because I had a mandatory course there. It was the Evening Reporting Center that I had to go for probation, but I took care of that. And now after that is where I found out that, I liked it, that they have a lot of stuff that it's interesting, like workshops, anger management. They have stuff for ladies too, women's circle addressing women issues, and it's like workshops for practicing safe sex, other stuff. They got Media Arts Center where you can go in there and just lay down a track or whatever it is you want to do.
So there's lots of stuff to do. Maybe, yeah. In fact, those of you in the audience have good experiences with Youth Uprising or, yeah? Can we go to some of you and maybe hear what you found there or what you have particularly engaged yourself or been engaged by at Youth Uprising? Don't be afraid to raise your hand here. Don't even feel inhibited. We'll go to you. Yeah. Oh. Tell us your name first.
My name is Jalissa.
Jalissa? Mm-hmm. You go to Youth Uprising?
No, I go to Leadership.
Ah, tell what's Leadership? Tell us.
Leadership is... it's the Castlemont School. No, never mind.
It's okay. Say what you were going to say.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say that a lot of people drop out because, like, the community and the people they live with in their neighborhoods, they accept them more, like, when they fail. Like, if you drop out, then you get to hang out with your friends, and they accept that because they dropped out, too.
That's a peer thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah, and Edson, you agree, yeah.
Yeah, I think, like, it's become normalized now. You see people are dropping out. It's, like, normal. Like, it's the thing to do. You're in that age where... schools, there's a lack of interest for it, and it's really irrelevant to your life. And no one in my family has graduated from high school, so some people think like, hey, why should I?
Do you feel maybe kind of out of it? I'll ask those of you in the audience. You feel, that if you're not a dropout, you're sort of not with it in some neighborhoods. You're not part of the scene. Let me hear from another one of the students in the audience. Please, tell us your name.
My name is Dawn.
Hi, Dawn.
McClady. So I was asked to speak about, what draws me here. Since I go to EOSA, what really draws me to EOSA and what keeps me there is that
what's EOSA?
East Oakland School of the Arts.
Yeah, from okay.
Mr. Bellani and Ms. Spellman-Hork. What draws me there is I'm allowed to have, a close-knit relationship with my teachers. Like, all of us are really close. And I guess just the culture of EOSA is, really strong because, Mr. Blaney said, he'll give us our props when things happen, when we do things that are good. So I think that's kind of what draws us there, and the fact that, we're allowed to speak with our teachers about things that are maybe negatively or positively impacting us. So that's what keeps me there.
So it's the human connections that you have with your teachers and of course, your fellow students. How many of you feel that way? I mean, that's what keeps you in school, the connections with your teachers and your students. Let me hear. I'm seeing a lot of hands, okay? Anybody else want to register what keeps you here or why you're here? Is it also what Edson was saying about family pride and maybe being the first in your family to graduate high school and those sorts of things? Please feel free to participate in this and raise your hands. Yeah. A young lady over here. Let's just give us your first name.
I'm Jackie. I'm a junior at East Oakland School of the Arts. And
For me personally, since my mom doesn't have a lot of opportunities to work, that's kind of my motivation to stay here because, like my sister, she is an undocumented student, but she managed to go to UC Berkeley. And that's, like, my motivation because seeing her, I see, like, oh, if I stay in school or I keep, like, my grades up, I can eventually go to college and give back to my mom. So that's outside motivation for me.
But also your sister's a good role model for you.
Right.
Yeah, and inspiring. Thank you. Thank you, Jackie. Anybody else in the audience want to bring some of your voices in here about what keeps you in school or why you're sticking around?
Hi, my name is Victor Robles, and I'm a Civil Corps high school graduate. I have a good relationship with my teachers and staff. They got me a job. I just would like to say that. So if you end up dropping out or anything, Civil Corps will be a good program.
Okay, thank you, Victor. It's a struggle for many of these young people, as we're hearing. I mean, in terms of just the pressures on them and bringing those pressures to bear in a way that even if you want to stay in school, it can be a challenge. Let's, Ali Khan, hear from you on that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the intention and good feelings are there. I know that one of the hardest things to deal with as a teacher is to. I mean, I teach mostly sophomores, so I'm teaching kids when they're 16, and you can never imagine in your classroom these students who are just, like, pouring their all into it and are clearly, like, a part of a community and are feeling it. They're enjoying it. You can see it. And to watch them grow up in a system and face all those social and institutional barriers that actually push them out. I mean, now we have those same kids that I'm looking at when they were sophomores, they're seniors, and it's just, it's almost like you can't wrap your head around the fact that they're not going to graduate from high school. And that, like, kind of simple truth is way too simple here. And also just, I mean, just shattering. It's soul shattering. You know what I mean?
Let me bring a caller on, Marco, joining us from San Francisco. Hi, Marco.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me on. I just want to kind of chime in a little bit about, I'm actually from a pretty similar type of neighborhood where it's, you know, there's a lot of people that I grew up with that dropped out of college, dropped out of high school. And one thing I wanted to chime into, you know, I barely got through high school. And one thing that, you know, was not available to us is being able to see what was beyond, actually, beyond high school and even going through college. I was very lucky once I got into college, I found something that I love to do. And the thing is that, you know, once I found that, I was able to actually excel at it and graduate. My grades in college were way better than they were in high school. And I think I wanted to chime in a little bit about it. I think it's important for students to see what is actually beyond beyond high school. I mean, showing them right now, I currently own a graphic design studio in San Francisco, and I just wanted to, you know, I was able to find, lucky to find what I love to do. And I think sometimes students, you know, don't see what can actually be beyond what their high school abilities are.
Yeah, an excellent point, and I thank you for that. And I'm going to go back to the audience. There's a young lady who looks a little beyond the high school years here who has a microphone by her. Yeah. Hi.
My name is Jane Klein. And I'm a retired Oakland teacher, and I taught at the other end of the spectrum. I taught preschool special education. My question is, how quickly do you know when a student has dropped out, and what is the response of the school when someone drops out? And another little side issue I had, when I heard that the peer group on the outside seems so supportive of dropping out, what is being done to get the peer group on the inside to pull students back and keep them there?
Very important questions. And Aaron Bowman, let me go to you here, if I may.
So the first part of the question is when do you know that kids are on the verge of dropping out? So I think ninth grade is a really key year We often know at the end of ninth grade, it's a little bit of a credit game, right? So in OUSD and Oakland Unified, you need 230 credits to graduate. And so if at the end of your ninth grade year, you don't have 60 credits, or if you're incredibly what we call credit deficient, behind in credits, then we already know you're on a path toward being pushed out, right? We use the term pushed out. So that's a really key year, and one of the things we've done at Castlemont High School is we've designed this new ninth grade academy, and the purpose of the academy is to hold ninth grade students really close, knowing that this is really the make it or break it year, that this is the year that we are going to, that the paths really diverge, right? And students who are on track, who are coming to school on a regular basis, who are getting credits, they are much more likely to finish high school than kids in ninth grade who are missing two or more weeks of school per semester, and kids in the ninth grade who are not gaining their credits.
But you know, I have to chime in for a moment, because we know now that if you have kids with low reading scores, even in the third grade, they're on a trajectory beginning then.
That's absolutely true.
You have to catch them earlier than the ninth grade, I think, although I know the ninth grade is seen as key, and we'll talk about more of that actually in the hour ahead. We actually are just about ready to wrap up here. I wonder if any of you could say, and maybe we could get a final word, Edson Gonzalez, from you, as a student who's staying in school. Is there anything that the school can do that it's not doing that would really make you convinced that you should stay through and get your diploma?
I would say some teachers here are really blind to the fact that a lot of youth here have a lot of issues out of school, and questions asked like, why is it that a bunch of minorities are the ones that aren't graduating high school and those that aren't are? And I guess you could say it's what they see out of school. Like, that's the real world when you get out of the doors here. And you see liquor stores on every corner, drug dealers, or you see a bunch of homeless on the street. And that plays a part when people come to school. And I guess you could say,
I think what you're saying is bring the whole community together here and get the whole community.
Yeah, address the problems out of school, because those play a huge part on what the on how the students get to school the next day.
I want to thank you, Edson Gonzalez. I want to also thank Aaron Bowman and Ali Khan Bulani and Sagnikte Salazar. Thanks to all the students who are here and the members of the community who are here. We have another hour ahead. We're going to talk with some experts about solutions in the hour ahead. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Polly Stryker, and Amy Machado. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez, and our engineers today are Danny Bringer, Jane Heaven, and Howard Gelman. Our interns are Keith Manconi, Ernesto Garcia Morales, Kyle Palmer, Dana Varinsky, and Catalina Viejas. And also props to Kyle, because it is his last day. Thank you all. Another hour ahead. For all of us, I'm Michael Krasny.
Thank you so much.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning. Additional funding for this Forum special is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.